Welcome, everyone, to DNSSEC for Everybody, a Beginner's Guide. My name is Julie Hedlund, and we are going to start this session in about 5 minutes. So please come in, take a seat, get prepared to join us to ask questions and get excited about DNSSEC. We've got really a nice program for you. So anyway, in about 5 minutes, we'll get going, and welcome. Yes, please do come up and join a little bit closer. We promise we won't bite you much.
Hello.
I don't know how you move it to, yeah. But then the video will show down there, but I don't know if that's really necessary. They're going to activate the video, I think, which will show in the bottom right. There's the video. Yeah, so the video is up.
You want that up.
Yeah. Can that be eliminated or hidden or? Oh, that. Or you could just put that in front of it.
Well.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm not going to watch what you're doing. Except for the video will show up in that bottom right. It's blocking the video.
Oh, I see.
You see what? See, it's kind of behind there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. No, we don't need to share my screen. Yep, thanks. And then if you just want to let them know they're in the right room, it looks like there's somebody.
Judy, can you see how many people are following this remotely?
Is there any way to put the chat room people up in the upper right corner? I don't know if it's possible to bring them back. Yeah, we'll try to play around with the pods. Yeah, we are, but it's right here. It's right there. No, the chat room was fine where it was. It was the people, the list of people. Right.
Welcome, everyone, to DNSSEC for Everybody, a Beginner's Guide. I think we are about ready to get started. I'd urge everyone to come up close, because we like you and we want to engage you. My name is Julie Hedlund, and
And I will just take a moment to introduce our participants. And standing behind me in the striped shirt is Simon McCullough from Nominate UK. And next to him with the Joe User t-shirt is Norm Ritchie from ISC. And over across from me, we have Roy Ahrens, also from Nominate. And next to Roy, we have Russ Mundy from Sparta, a Parsons company. And we have Matt Larson. There's Matt from VeriSign. And assisting me in this is Janice in the blue shirt. Wave, Janice. And she's doing the Adobe Connect room. The session's being recorded, and there'll also be a transcript. And please also feel free to join the Adobe Connect room. And right now, I will turn it over to Simon.
Thank you, Julie. Firstly, I just want to say welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for coming along to what is the sixth time we've run this session now at ICANN. And just want to say hi and welcome to our four participants, to Hans, Jean-Paul, Juan Manuel, and Wes as well. Welcome to you guys as well for joining us. So what's this session about? Well, it's the end of the day, and it's been a long day, I'm sure, for many of you. So what we're trying to do is have a little bit of a light-hearted look at DNSSEC. When I first joined this community and when I first started coming to ICANN, I heard about this thing called DNSSEC. And when Roy tried to explain it to me, I was like, scratched my head, and it sounded really, really complicated. And it took him a few goes at explaining it to me. And I said, wouldn't it be a really good idea if we did a session where we tried to demystify some of the stuff you hear about DNSSEC? It seems really complicated. It's got lots of complicated acronyms. But actually, I'm sure we can tell it in a way that makes it easy to understand. And that's where this session came from. I hope you'll enjoy the session in the next hour. Well, if you look on your seats, there's a bit of a handout here. Just briefly explains who all of my co-conspirators in the session are. Also on the back, there's some really, really useful resources. So if nothing else, if you go away with nothing else, but you just want to sit and have a look at some resources for DNSSEC, it's on the back of the sheet there, some very useful tools, technologies, and sites, and so forth. So it's a really informal session. Please do feel free to interrupt us, stop us, ask questions, shout at us. You may want to throw things at us. That is all fine. So please do take part in the session. So really, without any sort of further ado, let's kick off. I'm sure some of you have heard about DNSSEC. You've heard a little bit about it. You'll have heard about some of the myths about where it was created, and you'll have heard about people who talk about the IETF, and they'll talk about WITDIFFIE and all sorts of stuff like that. Well, most of that's a complete lie. DNSSEC was actually created thousands of years ago. And I want to explain just a little bit about its genesis. Okay. In actual fact, DNSSEC was created 5000 BC on the edge of the Grand Canyon. So here we have Arguina, and she lives right on the edge of the Grand Canyon, and she looks out across that fantastic view. And on the other side of the Grand Canyon is her friend, I say friend, Og. He lives in a cave, and he looks across, and he sees the beautiful Arguina on the other side. The problem they have is it's a really long way down, and it's a long way round, and they don't really get to talk much, which is kind of a problem when you've got a bit of a thing going on. So on one of their very rare visits, they sit together, and they're sitting around the campfire, chewing the cud, and then they notice the smoke that's coming out of Og's fire. And they have an idea. And soon they're using the smoke to chat, and suddenly their relationship starts to blossom, if you know what I mean. So they're chatting away using the smoke, and life is good on the Grand Canyon. Unfortunately, until a chap called Kaminsky moves in next door. And he's a mischievous guy, and he quite likes Arguina too. So he starts sending her rather flattering smoke signals. So poor old Arguina, she's hugely confused. She doesn't know who it is that's trying to chat her up. So she's a sensible girl, sets off down the Grand Canyon to go and try and sort out this mess. Gets to the other side, you can see she's not very happy, and she decides to consult the village elders. And there's a caveman called Diffie, and he's sitting there, and he thinks he might have a cunning idea. So he jumps up, and in a flash, he runs off into Og's cave. Like, what on earth is going on? But he knows right at the back of Ugg's cave is this pile of blue sand. And you can only find this blue sand in the back of Ugg's cave. So he comes out, grabs a handful, and throws it on the fire. And the smoke and the fire turns into this incredible blue. And now, Arguina and Og are sorted. They can chat away, and she knows only to trust the blue smoke and not the grey smoke. And that is pretty much it when it comes to DNSSEC. So don't let anyone tell you it's really, really complicated. All you've got to do is remember the blue smoke. It's about DNSSEC is all about making sure that the message that you're sending is being received intact. And that's exactly what the blue smoke here is representing. So that's about as complicated as it's going to get today when we explain DNSSEC. There is a little bit more to it, and so I shall hand over to Roy Ahrens, who will take you through that in a little bit more detail.
Thank you, Simon. Can I use that as well? Thank you. So I'm going to talk to you about DNS and DNSSEC, and I'll give you a overview of what DNS does and how DNSSEC works. Basically, DNS, or the domain name system, is a way to translate a name into a resource. And it can be an IP address or a text record. It can be anything. If you look at a domain name, it consists of a bunch of labels separated by dots. And these bunch of labels form a path. From right to left, you go, for instance, on the screen behind me, from the root to com, from com to bigbang.com. And this is what we call delegation of authority. So that namespace gets to be traversed by a thing called a resolver. A resolver is a box, a piece of software, sitting at your ISP or at the company that you work for, that resolves this namespace on your behalf. And these systems know where the root zone are. It doesn't know where anything else is. It knows where the root zone is. And the moment it hits the root zone with a question, the root is then able to delegate the resolver to the next level, and so on, and so on. And this continues until the question has been answered. Now, to put this in line with Simon's presentation, this slide, where Arguina talks to Og, Arguina is in fact the resolver, and Og is the server that hosts the domain name. And Arguina is actually a very, very modern woman. She has many relationships, not just with Og, but all kinds of Ogs. So in order to visualize this concept better, we've devised a little play. And I would like to ask my friends to join me. And we're now going to enact how a resolver on behalf of Joe User traverses from the root all the way to bigbang.com. Okay. Joe, if I may invite you over to my left. Joe would like to do something.
Hi, I'm Joe User. I'm going to do something very typical that everyone does. I want to do some online banking. So I sit down on my computer, and I want to go to bigbank.com. So I type it in, www.bigbank.com, and hand it over my ISP.
Thank you, Joe. Joe wants to go to www.bigbank.com. I don't know where that is, but I do know where the root zone is. So I'll ask the root first. Root, do you have the address for www.bigbank.com?
Hey, Mr. ISP. I'm sorry, I don't have that address. But I do know where .com is, and that's at 1.1.1.1.
Perfect. So now I know the next level, com. So I go to the server 1.1.1.1. And I ask the same question, do you know where www.bigbank.com is?
I don't know that, but I can tell you that bigbank.com's name server is at 2.2.2.2.
Brilliant. Thank you. Hello, 2.2.2.2. I would like to have the address for www.bigbank.com.
I can give you that information if I turn it right side up. The address for www.bigbank.com is 2.2.2.3.
Perfect. Thank you. And now I have the address for www.bigbank.com, and I can give this to Joe User.
Thank you. Now that my computer knows the address of bigbank.com, I can go off and do my banking.
Thank you. And that's really how it works, right? Forget ISC, forget all these other authoritative name servers. We have people walking around with pages. So, thanks. I'll need you back in a minute. So if I can just continue with the rest of the story. Thank you. To make things a little bit more efficient, I'm not going to do this as a resolver every time. What I'm going to do is every time I get a piece of information, I store it locally in a thing called cache. This thing has been devised over 20 years ago. And when it was devised, it had no security in place. It all goes over UDP. And UDP is a technology, or is a transport mechanism, that is basically the little brother of TCP. You can compare TCP with a telephone system on a high level. I call you up, you answer the phone, you say hello. I say, who is this? You say, this is me and me. Okay, this is me and me. And we have kind of a handshake. That handshake that I just described doesn't happen with UDP. And DNS is mostly used on the UDP. In UDP, it's basically like sending a postcard. I want to send you some information. I put your address on the postcard. I dump it somewhere, and I never look back. And eventually, hopefully, you're friendly enough to send me a postcard back with the information that I wanted from you. This is kind of how DNS over UDP works. The problem there is no security. Anyone can write anyone else's name on a postcard and send me that information. So this is called address spoofing. Even worse, that information I now cache, as I just described. So now this cache is poisoned. So these two fundamental problems we would like to solve with DNSSEC. And just to put it back in Simon's presentation, we have here Aguina. She can't make a difference between awk number one and awk number two because there's no way to distinguish between the two smoke signals. So let's introduce my friends again and let's enact how this cache poisoning stuff actually works. So again, we have my good friend, Joe User. I'm acting again as the resolver at the ISP for Joe User. So, Joe?
Once again, some more banking to do. So I'm going to pay some more bills. I want to go to my bank at www.bigbank.com.
And I'm going to start from scratch. I don't know where anything is. I do know where the root servers are. The root servers are at 0.0.0.0. Hello, root server. I would like to have the address for www.bigbank.com.
Hi, Mr. ISP. I'm afraid I can't tell you where www.bigbank.com is, but I do know where .com's Naven servers are. They're at 1.1.1.1.
Perfect. Thank you. 1.1.1.1. Allegedly, you are .com, and I would like to have the address for www.bigbank.com.
Well, I don't have that address, but I can tell you that bigbank.com's name server is at 2.2.2.2.
Perfect. Thank you. I now go to bigbank.com. Bigbank.com, I would like to have the address for www.bigbank.com. Perfect. I just got the address for www.bigbank.com, and the address is 6.6.6.6. Joe, here's the information that you've wanted. Go ahead and do your banking.
Thank you, Mr. ISP. Now my computer knows which address to go to. It's 6.6.6.6. And I would go off and happily do my banking.
Perfect. So we've just shown how spoofing works. The problem of cache poisoning is that this information I've got from allegedly the authoritative server for bigbank.com, I will store that in my cache. And I will reuse that every time Joe, his family, his neighbors, his friends will go to www.bigbank.com. So, thank you again. I will try to explain how DNSSEC will solve this issue.
Thank you.
So, now it gets a little bit more complex because DNSSEC introduces the concept of digital signatures. Digital signatures in DNSSEC assure that the information received came from the proper source and has not been mangled with in transit. And it used that using public key signatures. Now, who understands from a fairly high level how digital signatures work? Okay, I don't have enough hands, so let me try to explain that. So public key cryptography works with a public and private key, basically what we call a key pair. The public key, my public key, right, and I'm not acting as the resolver now, I basically have a zone, let's say bigbank.com, and it has a public key. That public key I give to everyone, and anyone can have that. And the private key, which is the counterpart of the public key, I store that somewhere safe, where no one can touch it. Now, if I want to sign something, I will use this private key to sign that piece of information. That piece of information I then publish on the internet, and that can then be verified by the public key that I just gave you. The cool thing about digital signatures is that they're digital, and they're fairly small pieces of information. And just like it can store a text record or an address record or anything in the DNS, I can store these signatures in the DNS as well. So now if I've retrieved www.bigbank.com, I get a signature with it, which is just a blob of information, and now I can verify the signature. There's one piece missing, and that's the DNS key. That's the public key I just told you about. Since it's public, and since anyone can have that, and since it's also just a blob of digital information, I can put that in the DNS as well. So next to the information that is signed, plus the signature, I can now retrieve the digital key as well. So I can do now the validation. Sorry, I'm just trying to click this one. Perfect. There is one small piece missing, and I will go to that in a second, because if I resolve this stuff now, right, just like this text record or this address record can be spoofed, these signatures can be spoofed as well. Remember that we talked in the beginning that I know as an ISP where the root servers are. That's how I start out. I need to have a start of authority, and in my case, that's the root server. Now, if I also trust the root server's key, the root zone's key, that key can then be used to sign stuff below, as in sign the second level domain, sign the COM domain. So now I can trust the DNS key from the COM domain because it has been signed by the DNS key from the root domain. To link that again with Simon's presentation, DNSSEC is the blue smoke that he has talked about. With DNSSEC, I can now discriminate between what's true and what's false. Okay, I've explained already this part of the slide. We're going to enact the play again, but now with DNSSEC involved. Can I ask my friends to come up? I'm sorry. Yes. So now that I have my friends here, we have the root zone, the COM zone, Big Bang zone. And what we first need to do is build the chain of trust. Just like you can traverse the namespace by going from the root to COM and that's then delegated to bigbang.com, we can also build the chain of trust that way. And basically, we need to have the root sign the key of the COM zone.
Here's my key. Thank you very much.
Perfect. And, of course, similarly, between com and bigbank.com.
Here's my key.
Consider it signed.
Thank you.
Perfect. We're almost there because I still need the key of the root zone.
Here you go. Here's my key.
Thank you for that key. That means that I can now validate stuff just like I can traverse this tree. So, let's try to do this.
More banking. More bills. Okay, here I go again. I'd like to go to www.bigbank.com.
Perfect. I'm starting from scratch. Nothing has been cached. So I go to the root zone and ask for www.bigbank.com.
Hi, Mr. ISP. Afraid I don't know where www.bigbank.com is, but I do know where .com's name servers are. And they are at 1.1.1.1.
Perfect. Since I have the key of the root zone, I can now actually validate that this information is correct. And it is correct. So now I can go to com. Hello, com. I would like to have the address of www.bigbank.com.
2.2.2.2. You look familiar, so I'm giving you the short answer.
Good. I also would like to have the key for .com.
You can have that too, then.
Perfect. Now I have the key for .com. I can validate that because I trust the root key, which is signed com's key. So now I can go to the next level, next to bigbank.com to ask for www.bigbank.com. Perfect. Thank you. I now have the information for www.bigbank.com, 6.6.6.6, and let's just check if that's correct. No, that's not correct. The signature doesn't match because the person who gave me, or the entity, I'm not sure, Julie, the person who gave me this information does obviously not have the private key for bigbank.com. And therefore, I drop this information. This is incorrect. The DNS protocol works in certain ways. I probably have to ask again at some point. And there we go. Can I have the address for bigbank.com?
It is 2.2.2.3.
Perfect. And let me just check that. Perfect. That feels good. The address is correct. And I now can, as an ISP, give this information back to Joe User.
Thank you, Mr. ISP. Thank you for the authenticated address of my big bank.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. And this is how DNSSEC really works. Before I give over to Rajmandi for the next part of the presentation, just want to tell you one more slight thing. All of the stuff that we've done, right, all of this play that we've done in the real world, in DNS servers, this actually happens after you press the key when you typed in a URL in a browser and before you see a page. So we're talking milliseconds here. This is really, really, really fast. Thank you.
Excuse me, would you like to take questions now from the remote participants, or would you like to wait till later?
We can take some now. That would be fine.
Okay, so Juan Manuel Rojas is asking, is it possible to implement DNSSEC in any web server with any name?
DNSSEC is designed so that
I'm sorry, he said with any C name, and I'm not sure if that was a typo.
Ah, with a C name. Okay. Yes, the DNSSEC works functionally with the C name portion of DNS. So we won't get into deep technical details here. Let me put in a plug for Wednesday, the full day session. If you want more technical details, that's the place to come. But the short answer for that question is yes.
Russ, as well, just before Russ starts, we'll definitely have a question and answer session at the end as well. At the end of Russ's section, we'll have an open mic, and feel free to ask whatever you want.
Okay, so I have a number of slides here that I'll go through very quickly and not talk a great deal about all of the content on the slides. The reason they are so voluminous in terms of information is so you can go back afterwards, take a look, generate more questions, ask more questions here if needed, but I'll cover the information, but cover it fairly quickly. And what I'm specifically going to talk about is implementation of DNSSEC. And DNS itself, as you've noticed, can be explained and illustrated in a very high-level, abstract way, and so can DNSSEC. When you actually get down to doing DNS, there are normally a set of providers that actually operate the name servers that you saw creating the smoke online. The smoke is the questions and the answers to DNS. And when you have a large organization, such as a registry or the name server that's providing name service as part of their business, you usually have a large, highly competent staff that does and knows how to do DNS. And those are the people that are going to probably best be the ones involved in the details of doing DNSSEC. And we'll get into various ways in which you can approach that. VeriSign is obviously a company that is very concerned with DNS as a service, and we know, I personally know, that they have extremely competent DNS operators. Many other large organizations also do. So they are doing the service in-house. Internet-based businesses that really are not DNS-centric, for instance, the web presence for an organization that is a nonprofit, very likely would not operate their own DNS. It would probably be outsourced or provided by someone that's not part of the DNS. All of the end users, like ourselves here, we depend on somebody else in almost all cases to provide DNS service for us. So it really depends on where you are, what you're doing in the DNS world. And this structure you see here is similar to the one that Roy showed earlier, only it's slightly larger. And the enterprise that I'm showing on the far right-hand side of the screen is Hewlett-Packard. So that's HP.com, and they have for years operated a very large, complex name service, and they do, for the most part, operate all their own name servers. CNN.com, honestly, I don't know if they operate their own name servers or not, but they operate a very big operation when it comes to DNS. Come on, here we go. Okay. So if you think about what happens when you are operating your own name server, then you have a staff that knows about DNSSEC or DNS, and chances are that's the same staff that you'll want to use to do DNSSEC. If you've outsourced it to somebody, then you want to make sure that those people you've outsourced your DNS operation to understand and know DNSSEC before you ask them to actually go forward to do DNSSEC with you. Because if they aren't capable of doing it, then that's where it gets a little more complicated when you've outsourced your name service. So when you look at the whole of a zone, what happens to a name in a zone? The content, the www.x.com or the any other name that you have in, has to go from the far left-hand side where someone says, I'm going to put this name into a zone, until somebody on the far right-hand side, like Joe User, asks for www.bigbank.com. And so you can see that there's a lot of functions in between that are involved in touching a name as it goes through the name service. And so everyone that is doing DNS now needs, whether you're going to do DNSSEC or not, needs to ask yourself these two questions. Do I know where I get a DNS name from? Okay, if you're in an enterprise, you probably would get an enterprise a name within that enterprise from someone else in the enterprise, as opposed to a registrar, where if you're going to put up a new website and you want a presence on .com or .net, .org, or a country code TLD, you'd like to likely go to a registrar function. So you need to know where you're getting your name from, because they are the ones that are the authority for the next higher zone that you will be using that name in. The next really critical question is, who operates my name servers? I may operate it. I operate some name servers. other people's operate some name servers, and there's lots of name server operators around the internet. And so you, as a holder and a user of names, if you're going to do something with DNSSEC, you need to know who operates your name servers. So here's an example of the flow that I talked about earlier. So I have a zone already in place. It has an authoritative name server. I want to add a www.whatever to that zone. I have to put it in. So I put it in the authoritative name server, that blue box in the center of the screen. And then when someone makes a query, Joe User wants to know where www.bigbank.com is, his query comes in. The recursive server, who you saw in the person of Roy Aarons as the ISP in that instance, will ask the question of the authoritative name server and get the answer. Again, another illustration of how it works. But it's a little more complicated than that when you look at the real world, how many name servers there are, how many places that you can go. So the way that the bits actually flow around is a bit more sophisticated, but just the thing to remember is the simplistic approach, but there's a lot of things behind the scenes that are going on that you don't know about. And so in this case, www.cnn.com, you think, oh, well, that's just one name lookup. That would not be correct. There's that many name lookups that occur when you go to fill that web page. So each one of those happens in real time, more or less, as you're sitting there typing it in. And when you do DNSSEC, all those names are validated. And there's some, that's the CNN.com today. It's even bigger than we made the first picture. So it continues to grow. And the thing to remember that's probably most important about DNS is it's the information that matters. If you remember when our player of Dr. Evil, our friend Julie, came jumping in and substituted information, that was the hijack. So it's the actual zone content that matters. And the reason you do DNSSEC is so that you can assure the correctness of that zone content. That's the whole purpose of DNSSEC. And so when you actually add DNSSEC to a zone, that's what you're doing. You're validating the zone content. You're providing the mechanisms for end users to validate it. And if end users happen to not validate it, if they're not doing DNSSEC, they don't lose anything. It doesn't penalize them, but they can still be hijacked. So even though you've signed your zone, does not mean that every user of your zone content will be using DNSSEC to validate it. So the users, you've done all you can as a provider of a name, but for the users of the name, if they don't do validation, they're still susceptible to hijacking. Now, if you remember the triangle earlier from how name service involves many pieces for an individual zone, you can see only partway through the zone is where DNSSEC actually works. So some of the things, like when I go to hand my information into the operator of my name server, if I don't do it properly there, invalid information can sneak into the zone and it'll be signed. But it, provided that you get the right information into the zone, DNSSEC will make sure that users can validate that information. So when you're doing DNSSEC, you really want to take more or less the same approach that you're doing with DNS, however you're doing DNS today, okay? And so the end result of really what you want to get, and what you saw in the play earlier, is you want to get your signed DNSSEC signed zone into the authoritative name server, and that's shown there by the little box that's signing zone data. And then when the validating recursive name server asks the question, in this case, it was Roy. Ah, there's my friend Roy. The ISP was validating the information. And so you know you get information out of the system and to that last point for validation. And the validation can occur at the end user also. But the most common thing initially will be for ISPs and others to do validation. And so if today, when running your name service, if you are a large operation who is operating your name server today, you will probably want to have those same folks be the key people in doing your actual implementation. Now, sometimes you've got a whole lot of pieces that make up your name server functionality. Sometimes you're using a product that's provided by a single vendor, but you still have your own people operating it. And sometimes you're looking at using other mechanisms, such as an external signing service. There are several of these that are available from our folks that you saw in the play. The companies they're associated with do offer DNS sec signing services, so you can turn to external activities such as VeriSign or Nominet, and they will sign your zone data and hand it back to you. And then if your name servers are capable of serving it in proper versions, you have done DNSSEC and your zone is signed. And you don't have to change your system other than to making sure that your name servers are capable of properly serving DNSSEC. Now, if you do a combination of creating and running your own name servers, using some products, using some external services, you may have different combinations of all these things. You may do some outsource, you may use single product, and then look at it and meld it all together to create your signed zone. Now, when you... Okay. Oh, this is showing me both sides, isn't it? Okay. I see. That's why I'm getting confused. I have the large one on one side and the Adobe Room one on the other side. So as you are using an external provider for your DNS functions, if your external provider is not ready to do DNSSEC, whether that external provider is a product vendor, then and you're operating the name service, but you're using their product, turn specifically to that product vendor, find out when that product vendor is going to support DNSSEC. Ask them directly, because product vendors that aren't implementing DNSSEC in their products, one of the biggest things that we hear from people on the product side is, we don't get requests from our customers. You're the customers. You know, ask for it if you need it. You can also look at adding some things on and doing the external signing service and using some open source combinations. So there's ways you can still do it. But if you're using a single network or a single products provider or an external name service provider where they're doing all of your name service, ask them when they'll be providing DNSSEC. And again, having the external people that are providing services and products that do not do DNSSEC today, the most important thing that you can do is press on them to do it, or even consider changing how you're doing DNS service to use mechanisms that do support DNSSEC. And in the case of product providers, that's probably their biggest incentive. They don't like to lose customers. And whether it's a service provider, whether it's a product provider, if they're going to lose a customer, they don't like that. So that's a very, very quick run through of how you can go about doing DNSSEC. And as you can see, each and every time an activity starts to do DNS, they decide how they're going to do it. And that's one of the great parts about DNS. It can be done very differently by very many organizations. And so that's why it's really hard to say, here's the answer for how you're doing DNSSEC. In each case, the individual DNS operation needs to be looked at and examined. There's lots of help out there available. It's on the sheet for where a lot of the tools are and a lot of the how-tos and so forth. And those of us that are here today on the panel, one of the main reasons we're here is to answer your questions. And so that's what we'd like to do at this point. We'd like to open it up for questions. It's not just me that's going to be answering. It's any one of the folks here. So feel free to ask directly individual or just general, and we'll go for it.
If I can, I'll start with a remote. Ryan on remote is asking, what do you think the timeline for wide-scale DNSSEC implementation looks like, and what are the major roadblocks?
Well, that's a broad question, and there are several segments of it. One of the segments involved is being able to get registrar support for signed zones. And the registrars, this is something that's important in this venue. We need to have more registrars that are actively supporting and facilitating DNSSEC. That's one of the roadblocks, is registrars that don't support DNSSEC today. Another one of the areas that we definitely would like to see more support of is operating system, the actual OS vendors, doing more DNSSEC support. There are some that do it today, but broad spread use is growing. I can't really say what a timeline would be for widespread use, because if it's used just at the ISP level, that's one area, and that could be a number of years away. A large U.S. ISP, Comcast, is doing DNSSEC throughout their network today. Every customer of Comcast is using a DNSSEC validating browser right now. We'd love to see more of that. And so it is growing. Back here, we hit. Yes.
Yeah, my name is Valer Mishin-Cohen, Allnet Foundation. Thanks, guys, girls, for a great presentation. Just one comment. You said go ask your service provider to use DNSSEC. So if I tell that to my mother, go ask your service provider, she will probably ask me, have you slept well? What are you talking about? So, but if I give her a small program, a client, which is DNSSEC available or DNSSEC ready, and then she's trying to use that and it doesn't work because the provider does not support it, then that's a legitimate question. But, well, where I'm trying to go is that we don't have good support on the client side yet. So I'm pretty sure that it will work on the service provider side, all of the chain. But if you don't have the client side DNSSEC, it will not work with my mother.
So the answer is for your mother. If it's not already in your schedule, please include our session on Wednesday, which starts at 8:30, and you'll see some answers presented right in there. For instance, doing a validation, DNSSEC validation on the home router. And I believe it's called DNSSEC Without Humans, I think is what that presentation is for. And that's an effort to focus on the home router kind of interface. So the only hijacking that can occur at that point, if the validation occurs there, is within the house. If the validation occurs at the ISP level, yes, between where the ISP name servers sit and your mother's computer at home, you are still open to attacks there. But ISP operations will argue that that's good enough and they operate securely. But you're right, there's not a lot of clients. Sparta does have a number of them. We have a fully capable web browser that'll do DNSSEC. There's a number of plugins for validation. What I was primarily talking about there in asking your service provider was focused at what I perceive to be most of the people at an ICANN meeting, and those that are interested in names in general, and most often ownership and serving names. And so if you're an enterprise, you have a name. If you're a name service provider, you serve names for other people. And that's where I was talking about ask your service provider. As we get more, we'll have more end clients, but it's slow to the end client. Back in the back, can you come up to a mic so those online can hear you?
Hi, Rob Golding. We're actually a registrar, so we did a quick scan for the people that we deal with DNS for. We register domains, we do DNS services, we do hosting, but sometimes we're only one of those three parts. The very quick scan showed that 87% of the DNS zones that we import from customer systems in order to serve out to the internet use wildcards, and that's not supported by DNSSEC. So implementing this is going to take 87% of our customers offline.
I understand your concern, but I think you're incorrect in your assumption that DNSSEC does not support wildcards. DNSSEC definitely.
Specification explicitly says it doesn't support wildcards.
No, I wrote the. Matt and I wrote this stuff. It's. Matt, maybe you can help me out here, but the way I think we described it, yes, it supports signing of wildcards, but that part of the protocol is a little bit more complex because we have to deal with those exceptions, but it definitely supports wildcards.
So I can put a star in a zone, and it will sign it, and on the A record will be validated by the client or the ISP or whatever.
Well, the way how it works is because when you provision stuff and you, for instance, use a wildcard because you don't know what the question is that someone might ask,
exactly.
And let's take foo.com. You have wildcard.foo.com and someone asks for alpha.foo.com. We can't anticipate alpha because that's not in the zone. Mm-hmm. That's why you have a wildcard. So what is actually signed is the fact that alpha.foo.com exists and that there was a wildcard for foo.com, and a validator who validates all that now knows that this is a wildcard expansion for that name. I don't know if that makes any sense. Maybe this goes too quick, but if you have any concerns about that, maybe you and I should just have a quick chat afterwards.
Yep. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Hi, Craig Schwartz. You commented earlier that one of the challenges is with registrar support of DNSSEC. Can you say a little bit more about what that means for the non-technical people in the room?
Right. Well, today, for whatever zone you may have, something in .com, and when the .com registry elected to sign .com, that's great because then they can participate and do serve.com records for DNSSEC just like they serve name server records for DNSSEC. No one deals directly with .com. VeriSign deals with .com through the registrar segment of the business structure here. And so just like today, when you add a name server record, if you put up a new name server for your foo.com, then you have to add that information to .com, and that's done through your registrar. And the registrar then talks to the registry. So DNSSEC has a DS record or a key record. They have both records. What gets published is the DS record for the zone. That information has to be passed from the holder of the zone through the registrar to the actual registry for the zone. So the registrar performs an important function of being able to pass that information to the registry. And a number of registrars do not have the ability to pass a DS or a key record for DNSSEC to the registry like they can pass an NS record to the registry. So that's what they need to have support for, is the ability to support these passing of DNSSEC records specifically to the registry in question. Is that okay? Good.
I have one from remote, if I could slip it in.
Sure.
Robert Guerra is asking, well, he's trying to tweet, and I'm not sure we're up to tweeting at our sessions yet. But the question is, how easy or not would it be for key companies such as Google, Twitter, and Facebook to DNSSEC enable their sites?
Okay, so it really does depend on individual operations, and I think Roy wants to jump in here.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question. Remember for IPv6, we had this famous IPv6 day. I think we should have something similar with DNSSEC. Have a DNSSEC day. And for organizations like Facebook, Twitter, and all these large enterprises, implementing and deploying DNSSEC is not complex. They understand the technology. The few of us that are here who have worked on the protocol have friends in that business, and we know that they're aware of the technology. One point that is often made to us is that these guys, the Facebooks, the Twitters of the world, they use something like large content provisioning networks. And that means they like to tailor the response, the DNS response, to the client who's asking for it. So they need to be a little bit more dynamic. That doesn't mean it's impossible. They just need to do a little bit different work than the standard tools that are out there. But it's definitely possible. And I thank you for that question, because I'm now trying to figure out how to get ISOC and basically the rest of the world start with a DNSSEC day.
One area that Roy mentioned that I'd like to say a little bit more about is the content distribution network, CDNs. And many of these large providers like that, as Roy said, do use these. One of the largest, Akamai, is in the process of implementing DNSSEC. And they do have it for some of their services, but not all of their services. And again, having encouragement from customers for the need for it. So if anyone of you all who are involved with Akamai or other content distribution CDN providers, asking for and encouraging the providers to support this service is very helpful. I mean, I am, by my work, an evangelist for DNSSEC. And so I say that. Most people know that. But I'm not that much of a buyer. You folks are the ones that buy services and products from people, and you are really the important people to be asking for DNS services from people such as Akamai or F9 or something like that. Next question. Yes, please.
So first is Michiel Leenaars, by pure coincidence, Director of Internet Society Netherlands, and having just organized World IPv6 Day in the Netherlands, gladly take it up. And 666 is a good day for DNS spoofing as well. So my question was, so we have a colorblind Oguinda, or whatever her name was.
Oguina.
So how do we... everybody that's using a tablet here is basically vulnerable to even if a zone is signed to DNS spoofing. And that's the most common emerging pattern, people with tablets, people with mobile devices. So why are we not pushing for this so aggressively that all these vendors do this? Because there is no reason for them not to do it. Or is there? So my question is, why aren't these, especially these mobile providers, on board of this?
Okay, go ahead.
So I think it's Simon McCallaghan. I think the thing to remember here is that the key step in this, particularly if you're a tablet user and you're using it, is your ISP. So, and the point at which you connect in and having a validating resolver at that point. So here, if you're ICANN, you're connecting in through an ISP. Provided that ISP is validating, your tablet is safe for the bulk of that DNS journey. Okay. It's that tiny last piece, is, as Russ mentioned, until you've got it right on the tablet, it's slightly different. But fundamentally, where the man-in-the-middle attack is going to happen is out there in that journey that we acted out there on in front of you all until your tablet is protected. The flip side is we are also starting to see DNSSEC being put onto tablets. I know Russ's group has already got some tools and software that will work on smartphones and tablets, and I've no doubt we'll start seeing it. We know that Google is doing some really cool work with Chrome at the moment, and we're seeing DNSSEC stuff happening there. So I think it's only a matter of time. But I think the idea that it's got to be on your device to be protected is not right. Does that make sense?
So you'll definitely have more protection the closer you get it to you, but the ideal, which those of us in the DNSSEC world have been pushing for a long time, is to have it done on the end device, but it does not have to be done there. So, like Simon said, that last mile, depending upon the technology, and if you're using cell phone technology, believe me, the cell phone providers are very careful and very precise in their technology between their towers and your end device. So your threat area in that link is honestly not that high in that link.
So, but it's people using the free Wi-Fi, basically going to the Starbucks, to here, to ICANN.
That's
I mean, basically, I can put up an ICANN network easily. And there's another, of course, layer of protection. I might have the correct IP address, but if I don't get the certificate out of DNSSEC with Dane or another technology, then I'm still hit because somebody else can stick in any other certificate signed by any other vague certificate authority.
So I go ahead, Ray.
I just want to answer the previous part of your question. Why hasn't this been implemented yet in tablets properly? Not as a patch, but by the operating system developers. So what I think would be good is, as we as a community, as the ICANN community, and I'll try to do that in ESSEC soon. There's an ESSEC session on Tuesday. And our various friends and here who can do that in their own constituency, maybe ask, I don't know, the ICANN board or the senior management of ICANN, the company, to write a letter to senior management of the Microsoft and the Apples of the world. It is not unheard of. It has been done before. So doing it this time with DNSSEC as the focus, we might actually get somewhere.
So let me speak a word about Microsoft. Microsoft actually has implemented DNSSEC. The way they do their last mile of DNSSEC is not exactly like those of us that are in the DNSSEC world would like to see them do it, but they've had DNSSEC since Windows 7 server release. It's in Windows 8 beta now. Their operating system for their desktop and laptop is actually the operating system that's intended to go in their tablet line. So they are actually moving, and from a major OS vendor, they've actually done more. Apple, frankly, has not been doing much of anything at all. Fedora, in the Linux world, is working very hard at incorporating DNSSEC. So it is spotty, and having it in operating systems is an objective that lots of people want to get to. But you aren't totally lost and completely out in na-na land if you have your ISP doing it. So, some of the demonstrations that I'll do possibly on Wednesday, I use a VPN back to my house. And at my house, my service provider is Comcast. And so I know I have DNSSEC. So that's how I do a lot of the things that I show people when we're at conferences. More questions? Back in the back, could you come up to a mic so those online can hear you?
Why do you think that some large CCTLDs have still not used DNSSEC?
How about if I turn to my closest policy CCTLD person?
So I think there's a number of reasons. I'm sure Roy's going to want to chip in as well. DNSSEC has been going through a long, long evolution, and it's nearly, 10, 12 years old now since the protocol was first proposed? Yeah, and
more
so
than that,
exactly, and so speaking from being a CCTLD ourselves, you know, we depending upon where you were in that process of involvement of the protocol was how early you tended to deploy it. So, for example, Nominet and VeriSign, and folk, we deployed a few years ago, now a couple of years ago. Some folk deployed even earlier than that. So we had some real early adopters, and we've had some folk in the middle. There's a technology challenge because it depends upon how advanced you are in your technologies or technology stack, if you like, as to when you would choose to implement. What we are seeing, though, is we're seeing at least 65, 70 TLDs now at least. I can't remember the latest numbers.
Yes.
I'm sure Steve will say on Wednesday what the latest numbers are.
Yeah, I think it's about 70 now, yeah.
It's a pretty significant number. What we are seeing is as the technology has matured and there's more information, there's more sessions like this, we're seeing more and more people get involved with implementing DNSSEC. We're seeing it put into appliances now and making it even easier to deploy. So there's one-click deployments of DNSSEC now as well. So we're starting to see that acceleration, but there's no easy reason. I can't speak for every TLD and every CCTLD, certainly, but Roy, I'm sure you can.
When I look at the numbers, and not just CCTLDs, but also GTLDs, I think that the largest CCs and the largest Gs, largest by the amount of records in their zone, they have been signed. So COM, NET, ORC, INFO, DE, UK, NL, they have all been signed. So by that, we can probably state that about 80% of the domain name space is DNSSEC enabled, as in the very signs and the nominates of the world, they can accept DNS records from the registrars. So, thank you.
Let me just add that there's at least one of the significant back-end providers for particularly some of the two, for the smaller CCTLDs that are offering either at an extremely reasonable or zero cost delta. I don't know that much about the business aspects, and that's the Afilias folks and the PCH folks, that they operate a lot of the back ends for the smaller CCTLDs, and the challenge in terms of getting those signed are getting the policy agreements in place. It's not a technology question. A lot of times, I mean, it can be a technology question, but it can also be a policy question. And I know, for instance, even some of the Mongolia.mn is a pretty small CCTLD. It's signed because Afilias just said, we can proceed and do that. So there's a mix of reasons. And now, as Roy points out, the largest ones by count are signed, and so working through the smaller ones.
Do we have any more questions at all? Anything from the remote room? Okay, so really just first I want to say thank you. Quick plug for Wednesday session. For those of you who'd like to come along, there's a full day of events talking about DNSSEC deployment. There's an update on how we're doing both in this region in Europe, but also worldwide. We're looking at a number of topics. We're not engagement with ISPs. We're looking at DNSSEC on appliances. It's a really broad-ranging workshop. It lasts most of the day. There's lunch included, as well as some fun. There's DNSSEC quiz with prizes, all sorts of stuff that's going on in that event. So please do come. Julie, do you remember the location for it?
Yes, it will be in Congress 1, so it'll be right over here. And it starts at 8:30 a.m. on Wednesday, and it goes until 1:45. And like we said, it includes lunch. It should be a very, very interesting set of presentations and panels, so please do join us.
Thanks,
and thank you, everyone, for coming today and participating. Good questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.